Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Primal Talks. I'm your host, your co-host, Jody Dighton, and I'm joined by the lovely Christine Bailey, who is co-hosting with me again today. So welcome, Christine.
Thank you, Jody. It's lovely to be here again.
Excellent. How have you been? Everything good?
Yeah, very busy. We're just about to launch what we call a 7-day green smoothie challenge, and it's all free. And all we're trying to do is just encourage people to either change a breakfast or a snack and incorporate more greens in their diet. And one of the easiest ways actually is just to blend it in the blender or NutriBullet. So what we're doing is we're encouraging people to sign up, which you can sign up on our website for free. Yeah. And you'll get all the recipes, the shopping list, and little video demos of each green smoothie. And we're just saying, just try one green smoothie every day for 7 days. That's it. Brilliant. So starting next 29th, Monday.
Excellent. And anybody who's interested in doing the smoothie challenge, yeah, you go back to our last blab, which was a month ago, and you'll be able to find it on YouTube. Christine and I spoke quite a bit about smoothies and the benefits of them, and she did go into the smoothie challenge a bit. So go back and listen to our former blab if you want a bit more information on that one. And so that's good. So that's coming up the end of February.
Yeah, of course, we're meeting up tomorrow.
So we have Christine coming into Roost tomorrow, which we are so excited about. And she's doing a talk on healthy, happy kids. And I got a lot of people, I've had a lot of contacts just saying, what's the event going to be on? So do you want to give a little summary?
Yeah, so I, as you know, see a lot of clients who have children. I actually see the children as my clients. And sometimes it is for specific health conditions, but a lot of the time it's for general health advice on how to raise my child healthy and happy. So what we want to cover is topics such as supporting their brain health, particularly, you know, coming up to GCSEs, coming up to the 11 plus or, you know, year six SATs and so on. You know, how can I optimize their nutrition through diet and maybe supplements as well to support brain health, to support immune function? Because, you know, although we are moving into spring, actually, there's a lot of kids ill at the moment.
Yeah,
you know, are the adverts, you know, promoting various supplements or foods actually any good for the immune system? What can I do? And also looking at common children's conditions, so eczema in particular, you know, is there a diet link? But also for the older children, thinking teenagers, acne. Actually, you know, for a lot of teenagers, it's really socially quite crippling for them. You know, it's difficult enough being a teenager, having got one. You know, there's so many pressures on teenagers. And then having poor skin, you know, whether you're boy or girl, can actually be quite damaging. Yeah. So what are the sort of top foods that you need to avoid or include? And what about supplements as well? So we want to cover a broad range because obviously we're going to have people with different age children. You know, from toddlers upwards. So, you know, I'm keeping it fairly broad, but obviously as well, we'll have a you know, quite a big section for questions.
So yeah, and again, anybody who's interested in coming to the seminar, tickets are available on Billetto. You can access them via primalroost.com, and it'll take you through to purchase the tickets. They're £15 a ticket, and it's a great opportunity. If you have something specific with your own children that you want to ask about to get that one-on-one contact, you can ask those to Christine there and be able to have a little bit of dialogue and find out what's the best way to go. So go on to the website and look for that as well.
Absolutely. And then, of course, on Saturday, linked to children, we've got a hands-on day.
Yes.
So we've got a cookery day in Wokingham for children with their parents. So we're going to be cooking a range of what we call healthier snacks. So instead of those sugary bars and things, how to make them yourself, some savory muffins. We're going to do a raw millionaire shortbread, which Simeon's going to bring down to sell, actually, at Primal Roost. So, so there's a range of things. We still have a few places left. So if people want to book on with their kids, then just go onto the website, go onto the workshop section, and you know, reserve your ticket. And it's 1 till 4 in the afternoon on the Saturday.
And Christine, just to remind them, which website, they need to go onto your website.
Yeah, so it's Christine,
what that website is.
Yeah, so it's christinebailey.co.uk. So very easy. And there's a whole section on workshops that we run.
Brilliant. Excellent. And there's another event coming up, which you're going to be involved in, which I'm really excited about, which is practically paleo, yes. being put on by the Paleo Society.
That's right. So this is the first event that they run in the UK. Obviously, as you know, paleo is quite big in Australia and America and so on. So it's really encouraging to see so much more interest in, you know, what we call a paleo lifestyle. So it's not going to just be about the food. We're going to have speakers there on, you know, movement, on lifestyle, on stress and so on. So I will be there talking about gut health and Great. How adopting a paleo diet, very similar to what we're going to talk about today, but how adopting a paleo diet can actually be very useful for people with either chronic gut problems and or autoimmune conditions as well. And which foods in particular can actually help to restore the gut.
Yeah. And if anybody's looking for links about that, if you go to the Primal Roost Facebook page, I've put links on that has the Practically Paleo, the Paleo Society's brochure for the event, and also all the details on how you can buy tickets to attend that. So if you're interested in that one, it is the 5th of March, Saturday the 5th of March.
Yes, it's a Saturday. And it's Alex Oxford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're looking to, you know, join those events, guys, because it's a great way to meet like-minded people, get information, and build the community here in the UK. Mm-hmm. So let's get on. So today, Christine and I are going to be discussing autoimmune conditions, how they develop, and how your diet can help to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Now, as people will be coming and going throughout and throwing in their questions, Christine and I will be moderating the questions and stuff together. But what we're going to do is we're going to address those questions at the end if they're off topic. So if you stay with us right to the end, then anything that you've put in, we'll try to address those just so that we can get through the information about autoimmune. Mm. So stick with us, guys, and we will see how we go. So, Christine, let's just start. Autoimmune conditions.
Yeah, and it's worth saying I have one. I have an autoimmune condition, and a lot of my clients have autoimmune conditions, and they may not even realize it's an autoimmune condition. So, you know, a summary is basically an autoimmune condition is anything where the body is mistaking either its own tissue, cells, organs as something that's foreign that needs to be attacked. It's autoimmune. So the immune system is responding inappropriately. Bear in mind, 99% of the time, your immune system should be there, not really doing anything. It's just surveying. It's making sure that, you know, we don't have viruses or bacteria. But generally speaking, the foods that we eat, it should be accepting that are okay. You know, it should be not reacting. An immune system that mistakes some part of a body effectively as a pathogen, which is what it's doing, and attacks its own cells, is a disruption of your immune system and is an autoimmune. And you know what? There are so many autoimmune conditions. So I mentioned I have one. I have celiac disease. That is an autoimmune condition. There's about 80 that have been classified, but it's estimated, which is interesting, there's probably over 170.
So what would be common ones that people would... Yeah. I think people kind of... You know, MS is probably one of the more common autoimmune conditions that people think of, but they don't have to be that full blown and big.
So, I mean, classic ones would be things like Hashimoto's, which affects the thyroid, diabetes type 1, celiac disease, but alopecia, which is a scalp condition, Crohn's disease, Cushing syndrome, which is where there's an issue with hypercortisol, but interstitial cystitis. Endometriosis, those are also autoimmune diseases.
Psoriasis, isn't it?
Yeah.
And asthma has been linked with some of these autoimmune.
Yeah. So, I mean, anything often that has an itis is autoimmune. So, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, but psoriasis, vitiligo, Sjögren's, lupus, multiple sclerosis, you've mentioned, pernicious anemia. Lichen planus, you know, these are all autoimmune conditions that, you know, collectively they have been identified in the States to affect about 24 million people. So actually, collectively, autoimmune conditions are probably more devastating than cancer or heart disease. And therefore, you know, if we can do something either nutritionally or lifestyle or supplementation-wise or whatever, that can tackle those, then that will have a massive impact on the NHS, on your quality of life and so on. And what we know is that to develop an autoimmune disease, you have to have three things.
Yep.
You have to have genetic susceptibility. So I was born with the DQ2, DQ8 genes that predisposed me to celiac disease.
Now, does that mean then that your parents were celiac, or they likely carried the gene and passed it on?
Yeah, so they carry the gene. Now, of course, if you go back in your family history, and this is why whenever I do a consultation with someone, I want to know, what about your parents? What about your grandparents? Because, of course, you know, 50, 60 years ago, probably some of these conditions were never diagnosed.
Yeah.
So you may find, for example, that you've got a family history of someone with osteoporosis, which is an autoimmune disease, or IBS or rheumatoid arthritis, and they were never diagnosed. So that's why looking back at your family history, thinking, do you know what? There's actually a common thread going through this.
Now, with that common thread, does that mean that if my grandparents had rheumatoid arthritis, that I would then I could be more susceptible to developing that, or could I develop any type of autoimmune condition?
Or it might be another autoimmune disease. So what we know is that autoimmune diseases often happen in triads. So if you have one, you may be more predisposed to getting another. And the other thing is, of course, that something like celiac disease is actually linked to other autoimmune diseases. So diabetes type 1, Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis. So again, you know, your flags go up when you know that there may be a history of autoimmunity. So you have to have a genetic susceptibility, but
one, yep.
Just having the genes doesn't mean you'll end up with that disease. So what else happens? So there's two things. First of all, there needs to be an environmental trigger. Now, we know, obviously, with certain conditions that we know what the trigger is. For others, we don't. So we know MS, one of the triggers can be chlamydia. And actually, you can pick chlamydia up very easily. So it's interesting. For others, there may be viruses like Epstein-Barr, which has been linked to Hashimoto's, for example. For others, it may be gluten. So it may be a range of things, and it may be more than one, but we know that certain food proteins, xenobiotics, interesting because chemicals were in the press today. So yeah. Chemicals in the environment, whether we're using them or whether we're exposed to them with pollution. So for example, we know the people that are often most likely to get an autoimmune disease are those exposed to chemicals. So if you work in garages, beauty salons, hairdressers.
Where is it not going to be cleaning products in our own home? The chemicals that we use in our own home now, gosh, some of them are so strong, the Vicodels and the acidic bags, you know, you use those in a closed room. And
absolutely. And what's interesting is that a study done, it was about 4 or 5 years ago by Pollard, and he was sort of wondering, well, why is it that more women get autoimmune diseases than men? You know, what is that? Is it an estrogen effect? Is it progesterone? What is it? And he actually found that there was an increase in certain autoimmune conditions in women linked to environmental cosmetics and prescription drugs, silica, solvents, in their environment. And if you think about how many products women expose themselves to before they even get dressed in the morning.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So
this is the other thing that comes up with environment, isn't it? Is that, you know, when we go back and say, well, 50, 100 years ago, why didn't they have all these autoimmune conditions? Because we are introducing, as you're saying, so many more chemicals in as well that our grandparents never used.
Absolutely.
And yeah, everything being so much more chemically based and artificial to clean things.
Mm. The other thing is that I think is not so well known, although there are some really good, there's a very good researcher called Alex Vasquez in the States. He's done a whole book on infectious agents as being a trigger for autoimmune. So things that might be parasites like blastocystis or infections in the stomach like Helicobacter, but also things that we now know such as Epstein-Barr, herpes. There's a lot of parasites, there's a lot of bacteria called Citrobacter, Diatom amoeba, which is another parasite. So there's a lot of research now going into these infectious agents. So again, doing a viral screen, doing a stool test could be useful for people to see, have I got that trigger? Because you need to remove that trigger. But what that trigger may do, and remember also, that trigger could be stress. because cortisol can be very damaging.
So that's stress will be an environmental factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Stress. So, and if you go back in a lot of people's health history, if you look at their timeline as to when they develop their autoimmune condition, often you'll find they'll say, actually, that was a really stressful period in my life. So cortisol can be damaging. Now, why? Now, what is it that all of these triggers are doing? And one of the common threads that seems to be linked is that it damages your gut. So your gut, you know, one cell thick, it can be easily damaged. And what we call leaky gut or intestinal permeability seems to be a primary mechanism now for the autoimmune activation. So you've got the genetic predisposition.
That's the third factor then. Autoimmune, or we've got a trigger.
Then you've got a leaky gut. And Fasano, who's done a lot of work on particularly gluten, you know, has very much said this loss of protective barrier in your gut seems to be necessary for autoimmunity to develop. And, you know, normally our gut, which is one cell thick, will allow proteins in when we eat, because otherwise we don't absorb nutrients, and then close. Now, we know in certain people that are predisposed, those gut junctions are often leakier anyway, but they can be very easily damaged, and they can be damaged by, you know, stress, by triggers such as bacteria, parasites, by gluten, certain foods, and so on. And if that is damaged, then what happens is your gut is, the tight junctions remain open for longer or even all the time, and then you get a range of either bacteria or foods or proteins into the blood system that the body says, do you know what? I don't like these, and starts to develop an immune reaction. And then it will look at that amino acid sequence of those pathogens or bacteria or foods that it doesn't like and say, do you know what?
Similar ones that are our own body's protein.
It then says, that looks like the villi of the gut, or that looks like the thyroid tissue, or that looks like the ovary tissue. And that's when you get what we call the autoimmune. It starts attacking tissues because it's mistaking them as something foreign that should, you know, that is harmful. So when we're looking at, okay, so we know this, what the hell do we do about it? The first thing we need to find is, well, what is your trigger? Is your trigger a food? Is your trigger a virus? Is it a bacteria? Is it a parasite? Let's get those triggers identified and remove them. Then we need to say, do we need to actually support your gut? And do we need to heal that gut? There's no point trying to throw stuff at healing the gut if you've still got the triggers there. You know,
you've got to get the
triggers out. Yeah. So you've got to get the triggers out. But also, what we also often know is that there is lots of inflammation. You know, often what we need to also do is calm inflammation down. And that's where diet and certain particular nutrients can be very useful in helping to restore the gut function and also in lowering the inflammation as well. And that's why some people move on to a paleo style of eating. Partly because we know that, you know, if you're looking at the key triggers, gluten is up there. There's no question about that. It's an aggravating food for the gut, and you don't have to be celiac to have a problem with gluten. And I've talked a lot about this on my blogs. You know, gluten for a lot of people is not helpful. Dairy for a lot of people is not helpful. And then there are other foods that contain things like lectins, which are certain proteins that can damage the gut, which are found in things like beans and pulses and certain other grains. And that is why, of course, when you look at the paleo diet, they remove those foods anyway. So those foods that are difficult to digest are not actually in the paleo diet.
Now, and often when you're going into to deal with an autoimmune condition, you sometimes need to go even the one step on from,
yes,
from even just paleo and going. There are other options. Just before you go into that, though, just before I move on into how we can look at healing, with an autoimmune condition, how would I, unless I went to my doctor and said, you know, I want antibody tests, I want, what is it?
Yeah.
Auto-anti-nuclear antibody tests. Can I tell if something is likely going to be an autoimmune response, an autoimmune condition, as opposed to me just being really ill or developing something else chronic?
Yes. I mean, it's a very good question. I mean, obviously, I have access to lab tests called Cyrex. Cyrex are probably the leading lab in the world for autoimmunity, and they do have a panel called Array 5, which will basically scan your whole body. Quite scary, really, but it will scan your whole body for antibodies to tissues, to organs, and so on. And we know that you can actually detect these antibodies 10 to 15 years before you actually end up showing the signs and symptoms of that condition. Now, why is that useful? That's useful because if you know that you are already starting to develop certain antibodies, you could start to take action with your diet, with testing for, you know, triggers and so on, and therefore potentially prevent yourself actually developing that autoimmune condition in the first place. I mean, I would say that there are certain families where you can go back on your history and think, you know what, I'm probably susceptible, I'm probably at risk. And that test may be quite useful. If you've already got a condition, like, for example, you know that you are low thyroid and you are taking thyroxine, just ask yourself, did the doctor ever test me for antibodies? Because often they won't. Now, as far as they're concerned, they're not going to change their medication if they know that you have Hashimoto's or you just have low thyroid. But from a functional medicine point of view, it's entirely different. Having an autoimmune condition is entirely different, and therefore our approach would be different. So for me, I would be really useful for me to say to a client, okay, we know you're on thyroxine, but have you ever been tested for the presence of thyroid antibodies? So it partly depends on what state your health is in at the moment. And you know what you could potentially ask your GP to do. The other thing I would say is one factor that's also quite common throughout the progression of autoimmune diseases is vitamin D status. We know that people that have very low vitamin D are more likely to get an autoimmune condition. Now, is it a cause and effect? We don't know. But certainly we want people's vitamin D level to be optimal. And that's something, again, you could ask your GP to test for.
Now, when you said, though, that the autoimmune condition, the damage could have been done up to 15 years before, does that mean at the time you're presenting for an autoimmune condition, there's probably quite a bit of damage done, that you're always going to be playing a catch-up game?
Difficult, and it varies for each condition. So for celiac disease, you know, we know that if you remove the gluten and do some gut healing, then you'll restore your villi and you hopefully won't have any adverse symptoms as long as you maintain a gluten-free diet for life. And potentially look out for any cross-reactive foods, because there are other foods that can cross-react with gluten. So that's a sort of different type of autoimmune condition. Again, it's very difficult. I mean, type 1 diabetes, how much damage has been done to the pancreas? It's very difficult to know how much damage is done to the thyroid. So obviously the earlier you get... Yeah. You know, knowledge of that condition, the better. But there's never ever a point where you say, well, it's just too late, I might as well just eat whatever I like, it's not going to make a scrap of difference. That's not true.
But it will probably have an impact on how long it's going to take for you to be able to reverse some of those symptoms, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's been building up for years and years and years.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, the sooner you can find out, the better. But what I wouldn't say is, you know, say you're in your 60s or 70s and you know you've had this condition for years, don't ever assume it's too late. I've got clients where, you know, by changing their diet, by putting in anti-inflammatories and so on, they feel a lot better. They're not going to ever get rid of that autoimmune condition, but they're going to stop or arrest the progression of it and, you know, lower the inflammation and feel a lot better. So it's never... ever too late. That's one thing I would always say. So, you know, obviously remove your triggers, whether they're foods, whether they're viruses, bacteria, whatever, remove them. And then what we know is that what you want to start restoring the function of your gut and lower inflammation at the same time. So paleo eating is very useful because it avoids processed foods. It avoids a lot of sugars, which can be very inflammatory. It avoids grains, gluten, beans, lentils. And for some people on an autoimmune condition, they also like to avoid other foods like eggs, which also do contain lectins and for some people are not that well tolerated. And they may also consider soaking nuts and seeds to make them more easily digested. And they
they're not necessarily fully eliminating them.
They will probably still use them because otherwise the diet becomes very limited. Yeah. And then you've got, you know, we know that if you are deficient in certain key nutrients, that can, you know, be quite problematic for the gut to heal anyway. So you've got to be
nightshades is often on that list as well.
Yeah, for the same reason, particularly tomatoes, actually. They're high in lectins, you know, so that they can be difficult. I would say, you know, if you're in doubt, you know, obviously see a practitioner. You can get yourself tested or you can just try removing them for a couple of weeks and see if you feel better. You know, for some people, they know instantly that those are, you know, a problem for them. Yeah. Then I would say, you know, focus on anti-inflammatory eating. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, focus on foods that will restore the gut and lower inflammation response. So you don't want to eat char-grilled food, burnt food, carcinogenic, very, very difficult for the body to handle. You're producing much more oxidative damage. So you don't want to start doing lots of barbecues, burnt food, char grilling, even very high temperature.
It's supposed to be the trend for 2016.
I know, it could be.
Char grilling.
Yeah. What I do love, as you know, are things like bone broths, collagen-rich soups, because collagen is very healing for the gut and anti-inflammatory. So we would do a lot of lower temperature cooking, slow cooking, and ideally organic foods, you know, and I would focus more on things like fish and white meats rather than red meat, which in excess can be quite inflammatory for those sort of people. But there's also foods that are anti-inflammatory. So turmeric, I mean, brilliant anti-inflammatory, ginger, garlic, and a lot of the mushrooms, you know, shiitake mushrooms, matcha green tea, oily fish, you know, rosemary, berries. These have all been shown to be very useful for anti-inflammatory style of eating. So I would want to include those. And then, of course, my love is fermented foods, you know, the sauerkrauts, the kimchi, the kefir, kombucha, keep it low sugar, obviously.
Now, one of the things, and we've spoken about this before, fermented foods are good unless it causes, is it a histamine? Unless you have a histamine.
Yeah, so for some people, they can have problems breaking them down because they do release histamine. And if you've got what we call small bacterial overgrowth, you may find that you need to tackle the bacterial overgrowth before you start adding in fermented foods. You know, and again, we would often, for gut healing, add in probiotics. We know that probiotics can be very beneficial at lowering inflammation, lowering things like IL-6, IL-10. You know, so, you know, there are inflammatory cytokines that can be problematic. And, you know, certainly studies on Crohn's disease have shown that, you know, probiotic use can be useful in reducing pain even in the gut. So, you know, Lactobacillus, Saccharomyces boulardii, these are all probiotics that we would use a lot. But you do need to, and this is where some people go wrong with the paleo diet, you do need to include food that will actually benefit the growth of probiotics. So when people go very, very, very low carb, it can be a problem because you still need some fermentable fibers to feed those bacteria. So it doesn't have to be grains. It could be sweet potato. It could be stewed apple. It could be yams, yucca, and, you know, unripe bananas.
Potatoes, vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. But if people do cut out all of their carbs and go, you know, really, really low carb, then if you've got a gut problem, it may not necessarily help you long term because it may diminish the levels of lactobacillus and bifidus in your gut. So just be mindful of that.
Okay. And then getting back that gut health, sometimes it's not just a matter of, in terms of healing the gut, sometimes you need to get rid of the overgrowth of bad bacteria before you want to start feeding the good bacteria, don't you? So how do you find that balance? And
And that's a very good question. I mean, I've got my new book coming out shortly, a couple of months' time, called The Gut Health Book. And it takes people through those, what we call the five R's, which is, you know, you need to remove those triggers. You need to replace digestive enzymes and stomach acid. you need to re-inoculate the gut, you need to repair the gut lining, and you need to rebalance, because stress can actually have quite a profound effect on your gut. But you're quite right, you need to get out those harmful bacteria first. So if you find, for example, you take a probiotic and you're bloating up, or you take some sauerkraut and you bloat, then assume you've got some bacterial dysbiosis, you've got an imbalance in your gut bacteria. Sort that out first.
And how do you do that?
Well, it depends what it is. With some people, they might actually need antibiotics. You know, I hate to say it, but some people, if you've got two or three parasites, you know, taking a little bit of oregano may not be enough to shift it, I'm afraid. So, you know, you've got to be open to, you know, getting conventional medic support. So for some people, antibiotics might be needed. For others, you can use natural antimicrobials like oregano, like grapefruit seed extract, like berberine, caprylic acid, depending on what you've got. So, you know, again, really, you need to see someone who's qualified.
It doesn't sound like something you can kind of
really, I like people to do stool tests and things, because you need to know what you're dealing with. Don't just guess.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel a bit bloated, therefore I must take loads of oregano. You could do yourself harm. So, you know, I mean, I'm very sciencey. I like to see the evidence, and I like to see lab tests to show what is it that you've got. And then sort of going on to, well, how, you know, if I've got intestinal permeability, if I've got leaky gut, what key things do I need? Well, collagen, bone broth, brilliant. So if you can make up your own bone broths, or, you know, go into Primal Roost and get a nice stew or soup, you know, yep, that'd be fantastic. Try and do it every day, though. Don't just say, oh, once, it'll be fine. No, you've got to do it regularly. I mean, you can take collagen powders. Now, one interesting thing, which, you know, is becoming more and more evident, and it is dairy-based, is colostrum. Colostrum has been shown in numerous studies now to help heal the gut. And you can buy, I mean, I sell colostrum powder. A lot of my clients love it. I take it when I've done a lot of hard work.
That must cost a fortune, because it comes in very small quantities.
You can get it as a powder. So you, yeah, so rather, don't get it as a capsule, get it as a powder. And actually, most top athletes take colostrum after hard training, because what we know is when you train very hard, you actually increase the heat around the gut. And that can actually in itself cause damage to the gut lining. So, and think about it, you know, what do a lot of athletes do? They work really hard, they train often too hard, and then they stuff themselves with gluten after they've, you know, they have a bagel or something, or a sandwich, you know, another thing that's damaging the gut. So a lot of them now, you know, there's quite a lot of rugby players, there's a lot of footballers, they and athletes take colostrum after hard training. And you can get it as a powder. Now, of course, it is dairy-based, so if you have, you know, a real problem with dairy, you can't take colostrum. But, you know, I mean, I take colostrum. I won't take any other dairy, but I will take colostrum just because I know how good it is for my gut, and that it seems to do really well for me. And it's great for people with immune problems anyway. Colostrum contains a lot of immunoglobulins to support immune health. So it's a good one to try.
So we've got, if we bring it back to our autoimmune conditions, so we know why we're getting them.
Yeah.
Kind of know we need to take any triggers out. We need to look at doing some gut healing. We need to improve our diet. We need to remove stress factors, decent exercise. Am I going to then get rid of my autoimmune condition for good?
No. And that would be stupid for anyone to say that you will be free of it. But what you may find is that the progression, because often these autoimmune conditions are progressive. I mean, not with celiac. You know, if you take gluten out, you should be able to heal your gut with the right support. But say with thyroid, you know, over time, that thyroid will be destroyed. Yeah. Now, what you can do is you can start to arrest that. And that's certainly what a lot of the research is suggesting, that if you can heal the gut, lower inflammation, so you might need some anti-inflammatories in there as well, then you may be able to prevent the progression of that condition. So by adding in things like omega-3 fats, turmeric, quercetin, probiotics, zinc, all of these things can help heal the gut and also help also with sort of lowering inflammation as well. But it won't happen overnight. And that's the other thing. Don't assume this is something that you'll just do for a week and you'll suddenly, wow, I'll be better. You know, some of my clients, they're doing this over months. Yeah. Maybe even years. And of course, you've just mentioned, you know, if a sudden stress happens in your life, cortisol, you know, when it's not working right, can actually be quite damaging. Yeah.
So it's going to hopefully help to keep it in remission a bit more, keep the symptoms at bay.
Yeah.
But other factors could still cause flare-ups.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the other thing, of course, is remember that you may actually stop yourself from getting another autoimmune disease. So, all right, you haven't resolved your arthritis or whatever, but you may, because we know that often people with one autoimmune disease will end up having two or three. So that may be another bonus. I mean, one of the first things I'd say to anyone is just get your vitamin D tested, because we know that there is this big link with autoimmunity and vitamin D. And that's such a simple thing to get done. You know, if your doctor won't do it, you can do a home spot skin prick test for 30 quid. It's nothing, you know. And again, even for children, I like to get it done because, you know, rickets has now been shown to be on the increase. I mean, you know, and it's such an easy thing you can supplement.
Where would you get that skin prick test?
So you can order it from my website.
Okay.
Yeah, and you just literally do prick your finger, put it on a piece of card and post it off, and then you get your level. And again, because vitamin D is fat soluble, you can actually overdose. A lot of people think, oh, supplements, you know, there's no concern. Actually, there is a concern. You could overdose. So find out, do you need it before you start taking, you know, loads of it?
Yeah.
And also, you know, I would say this, that, you know, things like turmeric are brilliant, but if you are on long-term medication, double check you can take it. Because if you're on something like warfarin, you know, there's a lot of supplements you should not even go anywhere near. You know, some medication will contraindicate the use of supplements, however natural they may feel. I mean, one of the things that we can all do, though, is to have a look at our lifestyle. And that's, of course, you know, one thing we often talk about in the paleo lifestyle is it's not just about food. It's about, do we move regularly? Do we get enough sleep? Are we exposed constantly to electronics, you know, chemicals? Do we have social interaction? You know, what's our stress level like? All of these things can also be really important. So I think that's something that all of us can do something about, you know, even if it's just saying, do you know what? I'm going to switch off all my electronics tonight. I'm going to have a long bath. I'm going to get some sleep. You know, whatever it is, those are easy things that don't cost any money.
Yeah. Now, if somebody's listening to this and says, you know what, I think this could actually be an autoimmune condition that I've got, what's the path to start with? Do you go to your doctor first? Because how far will they go in testing you?
Yeah, I would always go to my doctor first. Yeah, absolutely.
Your doctor first.
You know, there are some great doctors in the NHS who are very mindful of what I call a holistic approach in looking at underlying imbalances in the body. And, you know, bear in mind, you are being proactive. You know, you could actually cost the NHS if you went away and started smoking and drinking loads of money. If you're being proactive about your health, you know, the doctor should acknowledge that and say, do you know what, this is fantastic. Let's try and do some baseline tests. You know, let's check your thyroid or whatever joint issue or whatever condition you've got. Let's just see, what are your antibody levels? You know, or if there's a family history, do I need to test for celiac disease? Do I need to check for the genes that you might be carrying, for example? Can I get my vitamin D tested? You know, so depending on what your signs and symptoms are, I would always go to my GP first, always.
And if you're feeling either a dead end or the dead end, you feel like
Yeah. So, I mean, I would, you know, get some basic tests always done by the GP. You know, obviously, if there are more specific tests like the Cyrex, like stool testing, like viral screens, then you may have to see someone who's a qualified functional, you know, nutritionist or medic. You know, some of the GPs in the UK now are being trained in functional medicine as well. So there are people that will be private, but they can get those tests done and, more importantly, help you to actually identify what you then need to do about it. There's no point doing any test if it's not going to lead to doing something. You know, you could test for loads of things and it could probably just make you anxious. If it's not actually going to lead to you then moving on and doing something about it, is a waste of your money. So don't be bullied into doing hundreds of tests, which are, you know, quite frankly, interesting, but not going to be very relevant.
Always want to make sure you are going to a fully qualified nutritionist. Make sure you are finding somebody who knows what they're doing, who can give you the proper tests, and who's not going to just test for everything and cost you a load of money.
So someone like myself, I mean, BANT, which is the British Association for Nutritional Therapists, will have a register of people that are registered with them, but also check that they have a degree, check that they have some functional training, and also check that they're members of what we call the CNHC, which is the government's regulatory body as well. So they should really be ticking all those boxes for you to make sure that, you know, they've done the right sort of training. I mean, the other thing to mention is that always when you are talking to someone, you know, and you're discussing tests, just ask them, can I do these tests on the medication that I'm on? Because some of the Cyrex tests, which are fabulous, you can't do if you're already on, say, for example, steroids. And the reason I'm mentioning is that actually a lot of people with autoimmune conditions are on steroids. And that's just because it won't be able to detect any antibodies, because by definition, you're on medication which is suppressing the immune system. So, you know, just, I mean, you know, pretty much most practitioners should tell you all that. But, you know, don't waste your money if you're on very high strength medication, which is going to mask something.
Brilliant. We've been talking for 40 minutes. And I'm just going to just sort of cut that. I think we should call it a day there. Absolutely.
And obviously, if people are turning up tomorrow and, you know, they're concerned about any of this, then, you know, ask me questions at Prime Warriors tomorrow, because there'll be lots of opportunity for us to talk about individual cases then.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, thank you to everybody who's joined us. I don't see any questions that we've missed or that we've left out of the way there. So we will be back the last Tuesday of the month in March. So the ban will be lifted. So we'll see you then. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jodie.
Thank you for watching.